Have the clerk call the roll.
Mr. Scala? Mr. Wade?
Here.
Ms. Nauser?
Here.
Ms. Hoppy?
Here.
Mr. Heineman? Mr. Sturts? Mr. Thornhill?
Here.
I'd like to call for the approval of the minutes. We are approving minutes from the special council meeting of June 8th, 2009, and the regular council meetings of June 15th, 2009. May I ask for a motion?
Shall move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay. Next, I would ask for the approval of our agenda.
I would like to move that we adjust the agenda to add Thumper Entertainment for a short presentation under special items after TRIM grant presentation.
Second.
All those approved say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Well, I would like to welcome everyone to this evening's meeting, first meeting in July. There are several opportunities here for the public to comment. We have public hearings, old business, and new business. I would like to point out that those representing an organization or a group are entitled to 5 minutes, and those individuals representing themselves are entitled to 3 minutes. Mr. Watkins here, our city manager, is in charge of the buzzer, and he is very efficient. Tonight we have a couple of items. We have a special item tonight, TRIM grant presentation by Ann Koenig, representing the city. A check. If I could call her, please, to the podium.
Thank you. Nice to be here for my annual giving of you all check. This is for $4,434.78. It's a couple city staff went to a really good institute called Missouri Municipal Forestry Institute in South Carolina. I got to travel and go to that, and the Conservation Department paid for it. And I happened to be able to go to it also and saw that they were very well behaved and paid a lot of attention, and it's great to have them there. And it's really neat to see people from all around the country looking at folks from Columbia saying, man, you guys have got it together. This is a neat group. And while I was here, so that's real money, and I'll give that to you, I also had some very fake money that I wanted to, so it's bigger since it's fake.
I will go ahead and accept
that. There you go.
I never had checks on
this. Is an illustration. It's from the district trees downtown. We thought it might be interesting to see, well, show them to you. To see, you know, there's a lot of money that goes into investing in trees, and we talk about all the benefits, and really, where's the break-even line? Are we breaking even with trees? Are they providing more to us? Are we putting more, investing more in them? And so we did a calculation on the 426 trees just downtown. And we found that you get back 2 to 1 what you put into the trees. So you're getting back every year $15,000 in benefits from the trees, just the district trees, in energy savings and real estate value increases. So this is supposed to represent a check from the district trees for $15,000 every year. Something kind of nice to keep in mind, that trees really do pay us back. What you're investing in them, you get way more back.
That it is. Thank you.
So, yes, there's that. And
never had a check.
There's that one.
Thank you very
much.
Welcome. We appreciate it.
Yes. Nice working with you all. Take care.
Does anybody have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we have our special item that's been added to our agenda. I can call Thumper Entertainment, please.
Hi, everyone. Steve Schweitzer, Thumper Entertainment, 902 Wayne Road. Here tonight to present a check to the city for the 2008 expenses for city services rendered for last year's Roots and Blues and Barbecue Festival. And also, on behalf of Thumper Entertainment, would like to thank the Special Events Committee, City Council, and City Management for considering various options for us to pay this, including looking at adding, taking portions of ticket proceeds, payment options, things like that. We didn't really come to a conclusion on that to move it forward, so what we'd like to do is pay that bill in full tonight so that we can move on with the 2009 festival and all the exciting fun that brings. So I also have a check for you.
So I get to go down again?
I don't have a big check. I should have, if I'd known Ann was going to be here, I would have made a big presentation check.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Good luck to you on this year's festival.
Any questions for me? Thank you.
Thank you.
Two checks. Next, we'd like to move into our public comment process. People are always welcome to come and speak before the council, as long as they put in their request to the city manager's office by noon on the Thursday prior to the council meeting. Anyone from the general public can speak ahead of our regular posted meeting. Tonight, we have such a request. Each individual is entitled to 5 minutes. I would therefore ask Reverend Peter Davidson to come forward and speak, please.
I thank you. I'm a Baptist preacher. It's hard to shut up in 3 minutes. But honorable mayor and council ladies and council men, I'm Reverend Peter Davidson, and I moved to Columbia 2 years ago, and I'm legally blind, and the reason I moved here so I could ride the bus, because I can't drive anymore. And my request tonight is for a crosswalk at McBain and Broadway Street. Now, the traffic that comes down Broadway is excessive at many times. I have been to the police station, and they said that they would kind of patrol it. And it's hard for me to cross the street, and it's hard for me to, because I just got out of the hospital, I have bad lungs, and it's hard for me to walk up to Garth Street, cross, and then go to the bus stop. And I would like to have a crosswalk there and signs put up, beware of pedestrians. I almost got hit there 3 times. Now, I can't see to cross the street, but I use the traffic as my sound. And I was crossing the street, and 2 cars had stopped, and I had my cane out, and another one came and almost hit me. And I beg that we could have a crosswalk. I'm not the only one that crosses there. There's joggers and older people that cross there. And I hate to get the mallet, but there's children to cross. And I beg you to put a crosswalk there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions?
You may save someone's life, and it may be mine.
Well, thank you, sir. And next, we'll go ahead and start our meeting this evening. I would like to remind everyone that everyone does have an opportunity to speak at our public hearings. May I please ask for you to cite your name and your address, and please do not show any type of response to anyone testifying this evening, clapping and other actions. We tend to frown on that. So I would then ask for the clerk to read Agenda Item A.
Agenda Item A is the construction of sanitary sewers in Sewer District Number 166, Thompson Road.
Staff report, please.
This is a required public hearing on a public improvement. The sanitary sewer district is located along Thompson Road, involves 3 parcels of land. The resolution estimate for the sewer district is $69,000. All of which will be recovered through a tax bill not to exceed 48.5 cents per square foot of property. The entire cost of the project is paid from tax bills. Tax bills exceeding $5,000 will be deferred in accordance with Chapter 2297.1 of the City Code. I should point out that this sanitary sewer district was formed by ordinance on January 20th, 2009, by City Council. John, is there anything else that we need to add?
No, sir. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of Council? If not, I'll call the public hearing open, please. Anyone wishing to come down and speak on this item? If not, public hearing is closed. Any discussion by Council?
Well, actually, I had a question. I was just delayed in remembering it. It indicates that there's an annual cost then to the city of $2,000. And can staff explain what that entails?
That's the annual cost to, for any sewer line. I mean, it's our cleaning or 3 years or whatever that we need to do. We check taps that go in there. We do annual maintenance, possibly not on this, but that's just what it costs for the length of sewer that we're putting in.
So that's sort of a general average figure, yes, mm-hmm, per year?
Just for like that. I would do with the street, you know, in front of somebody's home. This is what it costs basically to maintain a sewer.
Okay, per year for that length.
I think that's a two-year cost. It's a two-year cost, so it's $1,000 a year.
Any other questions of council? Would someone like to make a motion?
Or is there a roll call?
It's a motion.
Let's make a motion. Approval of the resolution.
A motion that
and we need to record the tax bills.
The motion is on that. It's following public input and council discussion of the hearing. Council should make a motion directing staff to proceed with final plan specifications and construction of sewer district 166 Thompson Road and direct the city clerk to record the notice of impending tax bills.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed say nay. Clerk, please read item B, please, on the agenda.
Agenda item B is a voluntary annexation of property located on the south side of Richland Road along both sides of Rolling Hills Road extended.
Staff report, please.
This is a public hearing required by state law. Council will be taking testimony as to the question of should this property, which is about 271 and a half acres, located south of Richland Road along both sides of Rolling Hills Road extended, be annexed into the city. At your next meeting on the 20th of July, you will receive a recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission and will be asked to vote on annexation and zoning. Be glad to, Tim, do you have any other
Nothing to add. I'll try to answer any questions if council has them.
Does council have any questions for staff? If not, then I'll open the public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this matter?
Hi. My name is Tony Black. I live at 5533 Yosemite. I represent a group of citizens that live in the area of this annexation. I'm also president of the Lake of the Woods Neighborhood Association. We just want you guys to really look at this when this proposal comes in front of you. What they're proposing here is 800,000 square feet of commercial development without doing any road improvements at all. They're also looking at, there's a possibility of up to 1,800 dwelling units in this 271 acres. The Vineyards and Old Hawthorne together have about that same amount of dwelling units. But that's on almost 1,000 acres. This is on 271. It's also on the northern reaches of the Grindstone Creek. We already know what kind of trouble that creek's in. We know what kind of, you know, when you put 3,000 parking spaces on the top of that creek, what it's going to do not only to Grindstone but to Hinkson where it meets in down there. It's just, we've been to several of the planning zoning meetings. We've had several meetings amongst ourselves. And it's just far too dense. You know, we're not naive enough to think that this area is not going to get developed. But we understand that the owner of this property wants to recoup as much as he possibly can for his investment. However, this is where we live. You know, I mean, this is a residential neighborhood. We've already got a bunch of duplexes in there that are creating crime problems. And what they want to add in is a bunch more duplexes and eightplexes and apartment buildings and things to that effect. And it's the way their development agreement is written up, there is no requirement that the roads be improved before they start development. It says that the city has to approve the alignment of the Rolling Hills Road and traffic studies need to be done, but it doesn't require them to wait until anything is done. You know, they're just going to do all these studies and everything. And you know, I realize you guys aren't going to vote on this tonight, but my reason for being here is that we really want you to take a look at it. You know, this is Richland Road is a two-lane narrow road with a one-lane bridge. Grace Lane's, the biggest part of it's unimproved. It meets with St. Charles Road up there. It's a poor intersection. The Richland and St. Charles intersection is a poor intersection. And even if they do wait until Rolling Hills is put in, people aren't going to drive down to WW and take that road into town. They're going to go ahead and go down Richland or up Grace Lane. And like I say, my main reason for coming in tonight is just to make sure that when you guys see this, you realize the ramifications of what this type of construction could do, not only to Grindstone Creek, but to the residential area that we live in. And, you know, we just feel it's like it's far too much, far too grand a scale. We wouldn't be opposed to R1 zoning there like it is now. You know, it's county now, and it's a AR, I think it is what it is in the county, but it's just far too much, and we just really want you guys to be aware of, you know, what we're up against out there, you know, just want you to put a lot of thought into it before you vote on it. Thank you. Any questions?
No, sir. Any questions, the speaker? If not, anyone else wishing to speak on this matter? If not, I'm going to call this public hearing closed, and we're going to move on to new business, please. Clerk, please read Bill 120-09.
Council Bill 120-09 is an ordinance amending Chapter 14 of the City Code to prohibit through truck traffic along a portion of West Boulevard and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective.
Staff report, please.
This is an ordinance that, as it was read by the clerk, prohibits truck traffic along a piece of West Boulevard. Council considered it earlier in May and was tabled to this meeting. I think that there have been some discussions with the neighborhood. There are other alternatives that are being considered. John, is there anything else you'd like to add?
We did meet with the neighbors, Mr. Wade and I, and we're moving forward with an alternative plan, and be happy to try to answer any other questions that council might have.
Are there any questions of council?
Yeah, let me before we open the public hearing, I am going to move to table this indefinitely because there is an agreement on an alternative plan, and we will need to try that plan and see how it works out before we come back to this, and hopefully we won't need to come back to this motion. So I will move to table indefinitely.
Normally when we table something as to a definite date, if you do it, would you like to just withdraw it and then start from scratch?
Tabling indefinitely is an option, and it can then be pulled off the table at any time?
No, I don't think that's consistent with the charter. The charter requires you to introduce an ordinance at one meeting, and there has to be at least a week afterwards. And if you just pull it off the table at any time, you know, you could just bring it up at a meeting when no one knows about it and pass it. So I think, you know, it ought to be disposed of, either withdrawn or else tabled to a certain date.
I will go ahead and pull it off, and because I can always bring it back if after 6 months to a year we find that the alternative proposal isn't working, I can bring it back up then, and with a new ordinance. But do we want, before I do that, I want to see if there's anybody in the public hearing.
Anyone would like to come and speak on this matter? Then I will ask for council if there is any discussion.
I would like
motion to withdraw.
I would like to move to withdraw this motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those approve or disapprove say nay. Ask the clerk please to read Bill 16709.
Council Bill 16709 is an ordinance amending Chapter 14 of the City Code to prohibit parking along a section of Rainforest Parkway and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff report, please.
This is a request that was brought forward by Neighborhood Association Vanderveen to prohibit parking at all times along the north side of Rainforest Parkway near Providence Road. Staff had looked at it in terms of safety and concurs with the Neighborhood Association that we ought to prohibit parking for a bit longer on the north side of Rainforest Parkway. John has a map above that shows the proposal. I don't know, John, is there anything else you want to add?
be happy to try to answer any questions, sir.
Any questions by council?
I just had one. Is this near the area where they proposed for some kind of traffic calming?
I believe so, sir. It's right near the pool, right there, across the street.
That's what I thought, so, all right.
Does anyone from the public wish to speak on this matter? Any further discussion by council? If not, clerk, please call the roll.
Council Bill 16709, Mr. Wade?
Yes.
Ms. Nauser?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Ask the clerk to please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 16109, 16209, 16309, 16409, 16509, 16609, 16809, 16609, 16909, 16909, 17109, 17209, 17209, 17309, 17409, 17509, 17609, and resolutions 14109, 14209, 14309, 14409, 14509, 14609, 14709, 14709, 14809, 14909, 15009, 15109, and 15209.
Clerk, please call roll.
Bills 16109, 16209, 16309, 16409, 16509, 16609, 16809, 16909, 17009, 17109, 17209, 17309, 17409, 17509, 17609, and resolutions 14109, 14209, 14309, 14409, 14509, 14609, 14709, 14809, 14909, 15009, 15109, and 15209. Mr. Wade?
Yes.
Ms. Nauser?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Since there's no new business this evening, we'll move on to the introduction and first reading. Please read the bills.
All bills are introduced by the mayor pro tem unless otherwise indicated. Bills 17709, 17809, 17909, 18009, 18109, 18209, 18209, 18309, 18409, 18509, 18609, 18709, 18809, 18809, 18809, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, 18909, and 19909, first reading.
Now we'll move on to the report section this evening. The first report is for informational purposes only. I ask for a staff report on report number B, please.
As we complete the construction of Providence north of Vandiver, staff is proposing some changes in the markings of the intersection at Vandiver and Providence, particularly on northbound Providence to south of Vandiver. And this is really the result of additional through traffic occurring as the Providence Road extension is completed. John, if you'd explain the proposal.
Yes, what we're looking at on the bottom is the existing condition, which basically you have four lanes of traffic, two going north, two going south. With the anticipation of more traffic coming through here because of the bridge and over the Bear Creek, we're wanting to install what we call a two-way left turn lane in the middle because we're going to have a lot of turning movements in all these driveways along this stretch. MoDOT owns the piece from Texas to the south toward the interchange. The city owns the bulk of the roadway. We have worked with MoDOT. They're agreeable to this, and we wanted to get your concurrence.
Any council questions? If not, need a motion?
A motion to accept.
Second.
Second.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay. Staff, please report C.
This is a report requested by council on what it would take to add additional streetlights on Old 63. From Stadium to north of Grindstone. Staff has come back with a proposal that meets our current street lighting standards, which are essentially the national standards. In order to meet those standards for light, staff is suggesting 27 new lights at a cost to the electric utility of about $64,000, and then a repayment from the city's general fund of about $6,400 annually, and that would come from the general fund. We are looking for some direction. I don't know that we need a decision at all tonight, but this is in response to the council request. Craig, is there anything else you'd want to add?
No, sir. Just here to answer any questions.
I've got a question. I'm the new guy here, but I'm curious, is there a reason specifically that we're only given one option opposed to maybe a second to consider, so that if the first one isn't something we feel is the best route, that there's an alternative to consider?
We'd be more than happy to generate additional options. What specifically are you referring to?
Just something in general. If a suggestion is made for additional lighting, say, if there is another option available, if we're given a couple to choose from, or was the request specifically for this plan?
Go ahead.
At the request of the Neighborhood Association, I asked staff to look at whether lighting is needed and how much it would cost. This is an estimate for full lighting, but as I was reading it, there's some existing poles, and so the cost really varies based on location. So this plan, it looks like, could be, I mean, you could have selected lighting as we're sort of looking at, in terms of looking at where we most need lighting for safety, where there's duplicate lighting and the cost for each location. So I think that's what I would like to look at, some options for a less extensive lighting plan that still does the trick in terms of safety, so it would be substantially less cost.
I think that's where I was headed. Yeah, I think seeing what alternatives there would be, given that we're considering reduction of lighting, but this seems to be an inordinate amount considering the other options of reducing lighting in other areas. So it would be nice to see an alternative that would both cost less but still satisfy some of the lighting requirement.
Sure. We're currently calling for 27 new lights. There are 10 existing lights along that stretch of roadway, so we can certainly cut that back. Any new lights we put up there would improve the visibility and the safety for the motoring public.
So in response, my question would be if staff could look at the spots that are particularly safety concerns and where we need lighting most, so we can make some choices. And I guess I'd like to take this back to the Neighborhood Association and have them also give me input as to which particular locations they think are the high priority areas. There's some areas that are very expensive to put a pole because of the location and the slope, and I would guess we should eliminate that unless it's a serious safety area. So one, if staff could come back with more specific.
Could you arrange maybe a meeting with some neighborhood representatives, and we could bring a couple of our engineers in and talk about what the highest priorities are?
That would be great.
If we could do that, I think that might be one approach to making sure we meet the needs.
But this is a great start, something. If we did the full court, what press or whatever the term is, what it would cost, and then to pull back.
Thank you, Craig.
One quick comment to add to what Mr. Thornhill said. I guess in a more general sense, with things like this, I find it much more valuable if we have the technical proposals with perhaps two or three different options with different standards, rather than just having the one single standard that tends to be the top of the line standard. It makes it much better as we look at the decisions, and especially as we're looking at the whole street lighting process in general.
And if you take a look at the print that we provided, we show where the existing lights are and the new lights, and there's actually three different types of new lights. And if you would like to go in
maybe go out to the road in the evening sometime, pick some areas where you think it's most important. You can certainly take some of these off, and we can adjust the estimate accordingly. It's very easy to do.
But I would also find it useful to have the engineer's analysis of different options and what the impact on lighting levels of that would be as well.
So anything else on this? So we don't have any action to take. This is going back.
In terms of staff going back with engineers and making some specific priority recommendations for then getting together with the neighborhood.
Okay.
Is there a motion that needs to be
done? I think we can just proceed with that, and then we can bring back either some additional options or a revised option.
Thanks.
I would ask staff to read Report D, please.
Council had asked us for an analysis of the fiscal impact of installation of load management switches on all newly constructed single-family homes. These are the switches that go on air conditioners that are radio controlled that can cycle in and out some of the air conditioning load to cut peak demand during particularly hot times. I'm going to ask Craig to kind of go through the report in terms of what we're doing and what it might cost versus the benefits of making these mandatory.
Sure, would be glad to. Our current load management program that we have about actually 18,000 switches installed on about 12,000 different customer sites. These switches, again, are cycled during the hottest afternoons in July and August. When our peak, we anticipate cycling these when we reach a peak of about 270 megawatts this summer. Our current peak's only reached about 260 megawatts to date. When we do cycle these, we see an immediate drop in our load of about 8 megawatts, and so that keeps us from setting new peaks and requiring need for additional generation as a result of that. What we did is we calculated what the average actual cost is to install these devices. The actual switch is about $68, but by the time we install it, and we do some ourselves and we do some with contractors, the estimated cost per installation per customer is $178. These switches typically are installed by the contractor, but we will also go out and retrofit existing customer facilities as well. The average, what we did is we used an average of 1.6 switches per new residential home because many of the new homes have more than one air conditioning compressor on them. So what we wanted to do was to provide you with the information, what it costs to install these. We have not installed as many this year due to the economic conditions, but if the economy does recover, we could install up to 1,000 different, or install these switches on up to 1,000 homes under normal growth conditions. So the cost is listed in there for you. If the City Council would like to require new homes to have these switches installed, we could certainly do that. And we've provided the cost and the information necessary for budgeting purposes.
Last year, due to a relatively cool summer, we did not use the switches.
That is correct.
I think it is an important part is that if you sign up for a switch, you get a 5% discount. So last year we had no need for the switches, but we gave a pretty good discount to our customers. This year I think we've constructed very few new homes as we have last year as well. So it doesn't have that. We're not going to be installing 1,000 switches. What's the payback in terms of 8 megawatts?
Well, the per kilowatt, as you know, we're investigating purchasing another turbine at the Columbia Energy Center. Every kilowatt is worth about $500. That's the current offering price from Ameren for another turbine at the Columbia Energy Center, $500 per kilowatt. So you would have to times the 500 times 8,000 kilowatts in order to come up with a number to compare the two.
So that's what we would save, or we are saving when we have the ability to lower our peak demand by 8 megawatts.
That is correct.
The report stated that our program did pass the cost-benefit ratio as a viable program, but it also said something about going back and renewing it on an annual basis. Is that something we're going to be starting?
Yes, we're currently working with a consultant. We're getting a proposal together to take a look at many of our programs. The capacity market, the energy market, has changed significantly over the last couple of years with the downturn in the economy. So we're going to go back and take a look at that and make sure that all of our programs are cost competitive. And as you mentioned in this report, it does say that we probably need to go back and reevaluate the program and adjust the rebate accordingly.
And there was another comment on here, too, in this report that said that you send it to new electric utility accounts. Do you send it to existing accounts also periodically? Because it seems if the economy is lower, that people would want to find ways to save money.
Yeah, we currently install these switches on existing customers' homes if they request us to do so. It's a voluntary program. It is not required. Again, the incentive is to save 5% on their electric utility bills during the four summer months.
And the advertising process or marketing, is there on the utility bills? Or
it's on utility bills, on our website. Of course, we're out talking to customers a lot about this program.
Thank you.
And related to that, it indicates that 12,000, presently 12,075 customers use the load management. So what's the total number of customers?
About 44,000 total customers, but that includes residential, commercial, and industrial.
About a quarter or a little more.
Mr. Wade?
Yeah. As I tried to understand the report, what I thought I was reading was that there's a direct relationship probably between the cost effectiveness of this and the energy efficiency of the air conditioning unit, that with the new air conditioning units that are highly inefficient, it is probably not cost effective. I appreciate the program. We get a 5% discount and we have an inefficient air conditioner. Will your future data begin to, at some point, will we find that it may be more cost effective to move away from this and invest in getting all of the inefficient air conditioners replaced? And will the data begin to show us where some decision cutoff points are in terms of how we invest that money to manage peak?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Mr. Wade. We currently offer rebates for our customers to put in high-efficiency air conditioners. And so somebody could put in a very high-efficient, a SEER 16 or above, and then they could ask for a load management switch. And then it may not be as cost-effective as somebody putting in a 14 SEER or a 12 SEER unit. So we plan on taking a look at that. We want to make sure that what we're doing is cost-effective, that it does provide a benefit to the utility, and we could certainly investigate that as well.
Okay, thank you.
So just so I'm clear on that also, basically we may save more if we direct load management to the existing homes and businesses that have low efficient air conditioners than the new homes that will have efficient, more efficient.
Not all new homes, though, have the SEER 16 air conditioner. So some of the new homes may be putting in something that's still probably more energy efficient than the old ones, but still not at the 16 level.
Okay, so maybe one question to deal with is whether to require more efficient,
right,
the more efficient air conditioner.
That's a possibility, and the payback versus the cost of installing it. And we do that to some extent now through rebates, so that if you're willing to install a 16 SEER versus a 14 SEER, you get a higher rebate, which helps defer a piece of the increased cost.
Staff, to read Report E, please.
Report E is a report on the Roots and Blues and Barbecue Festival. This is something that we've been working with the sponsors of the festival on for a number of months. Council heard a discussion at pre-council, at the open pre-council meeting regarding ticket area procedures. Our goal with the festival this year was to try to get as many of these details worked out and in writing and have them widely distributed so that council could hold a public hearing and take testimony on the proposal. We are not asking for council to vote on this issue tonight, only to indicate to us whether we should bring it back at the next meeting with a resolution, which is how we would like to bring it to the council.
Before we proceed, I neglected to state that I needed to abstain from making a motion or moving forward on this due to a conflict of interest. So I would ask if I could tell council members if I can be abstained from requesting this be moved onto the next agenda.
I'd also point out that when a council member abstains, usually, and in a case like this, the abstention goes with a majority. So if three of you vote, it would be four votes, affirmative votes.
Okay.
I know it put us in a precarious spot.
Someone needs to make
a motion. So I need to have somebody make a motion for me to not.
Okay. Can we, if we have questions, though?
No, make a motion allowing her to abstain.
Oh, yes. Okay. I would like to make a motion to allow Ms. Nauzer to abstain.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay. Now it's appropriate for council comments, discussion.
Well, I had a question. Do we have anyone to answer questions? I know we had an opportunity at the work session to
I think questions. Members of the sponsors are here, or we could get staff.
One question I did not ask at work session, it indicated that in the ticketed area, no one would be allowed to bring in chairs or umbrellas. And I was concerned about older people who cannot stand, if there could be some type of chaired area for handicapped people or people with a physical disability that can't stand for long periods of time.
We're doing a study right now addressing that. We're concerned about that too. And we want to make sure that folks that need to sit are allowed to sit. That is something that we're addressing. One thing that I can tell you about that is pretty well confirmed is within the footprint, we are putting in picnic tables where allowed. We discussed this at a special event committee meeting where members of the fire department and police department were there. We're going to work with them and with the city on exactly where the placement of those picnic tables will be so that folks can actually sit down and enjoy a beverage and barbecue sandwich. In terms of around the stage area, we will take a look at that.
And what is the logic with no umbrellas? If people have allergies to the sun, they should just wear their hats, or it rains, things will be closed. What give me the rationale?
Umbrellas specifically, it's primarily a safety issue. It also has to do with blocking others' views. My recommendation is alternative clothing, hats, rain gear if it rains. The show will be rain or shine.
There's a similar restriction at the football stadium.
Yeah. I'm more concerned about the chairs. That makes sense on the umbrellas.
Right. We're trying to limit the amount of unnecessary obstruction for safety reasons. It is primarily for safety, but we do understand that there are special consideration needs to be given to handicap. So we will have a plan for that. Any other questions?
Discussion?
With the discussion we had in the work session and the resolution of the money, I would move that council or staff prepare a resolution for consideration at the July 20th meeting.
Second.
All those approved, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Staff report F, please.
This is a request, again, by council to review the Lee Summit abandoned registration and maintenance ordinance. We coordinated, Mr. Bachman wrote the report, we coordinated with Protective Inspection and with the Health Department. And while we are continuing to see more foreclosures, we just don't recommend that we go to this level right now. I think we ought to keep this kind of option open, but we just don't see the need of it yet, and hopefully things get turned around never. Be glad to answer any questions.
No questions? Staff report G, please.
Staff report G is the annual report from CAT TV, Columbia Access Television. As you may recall, we have a contract with them whereby we provide some cable TV franchise money, and in return, they must provide to the council a public annual report. We put this report on as an agenda item, as a report, and would treat them somewhat like a board and commission, in that we wanted to make sure that the council and the public had access to it. I think the appropriate thing here would be simply to accept the report.
I'll move to accept the report.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed say nay. Appears to be no appointments to our boards and commissions at this time, so we'll move on to comments by the public. Anyone wishing to speak? I'd like to invite you down at this time. Appears to be no one who wishes to speak to us this evening, so we'll move on to council comments. Who would like to start this evening?
I have a couple.
Mr. Wade?
First of all, let me quickly explain what the agreement was on the West Boulevard, because I've got a motion coming out of that agreement. The concern of the neighbors was the amount of truck traffic and noise and speed, with some serious safety issues. And even though West Boulevard is classified as a minor arterial, there is 133 driveways, and it really is not an arterial, and so there was a concern about how we can get some control. There are two immediate actions that are going to be put into place based on what we agreed. One is an all stop at the intersection of West Boulevard and Stewart Road. That will be done. There will need to be one more neighborhood meeting with the people west of West Boulevard on Stewart. There's a couple of different designs, and they're the ones that will most impact, and so they need to be part of that decision. The second thing addresses the issue of both the traffic on West Boulevard and the truck traffic, and the problem of safety at West Elementary School. So I would like to request an ordinance that would restrict through truck traffic in the West Elementary school zone between 7:30 and 9:30 a.m. and 2:30 and 4:30 when school is in session. And if we could have that ordinance for first reading at the next council meeting, so that it can then be considered for vote at the first meeting in August, that would have that in effect in time for Public Works to get the signage done prior to the opening of school. The intent is to evaluate the impact on West Boulevard of those two actions for about 6 months, and then there will be another meeting with Public Works and the neighbors to see if we have accomplished the purpose And if not, then there will be a third action that will be considered, which is some kind of traffic management at West Winds Drive and West Boulevard. But we will wait and see what the impact of these two actions will be. So I do request that ordinance.
So we need a second that motion, or?
No. I don't.
I guess that's not reported.
Beg pardon?
You can go ahead and make it as a motion.
Okay. Well, so moved.
Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
The second thing that I would like to do is I've got a personal statement that I would like to make on the bike harassment ordinance that we passed at our June 15th meeting. I'd like to talk just a minute about my own actions on the bike harassment ordinance and what happened. When I left the home that Monday evening for the June 15th meeting, it was my intention to not support the ordinance. And my reasons for that were threefold. I think it is inappropriate to craft an ordinance concerning harassment for the relationship of just one specific relationship. Harassment is unacceptable in any context, and if a new ordinance was needed, it should have been written correctly in the beginning to encompass harassment in a more general sense between whoever would be involved. Secondly, I think that it is going to be questionable if this ordinance will actually work or make any difference. It is based on proving intent, and it may not even be necessary except to give symbolic recognition to the rights of bicyclists. And symbolic recognition, to me, is not a justification for a new ordinance. Perhaps, which we did not adequately explore, the bicyclist harassment was already covered by existing ordinances or could be with a minor amendment. Finally, there is a substantial polarization going on right now, and it has been going on for at least 2 to 3 years. I noted it 3 years ago and several times since, between bicyclists and drivers and between the bicycle community and the general public. This ordinance substantially contributes to that. That polarization is part of a broader backlash that, as I've noted, have been building for some time against the strong focus that we have had in this community on bicycle projects. The reaction to this ordinance is not just a few disgruntled folks, but it is a far broader-based response of people frustrated with the council. There are many who feel that the council has pandered to the wishes of a special interest group without giving a lot of consideration to others. The important point is that I firmly believe the council should not pass a law until it is right. It was fully my intention to advocate that position and either support voting the ordinance down or tabling it until rewritten to what the ordinance should be. What happened? During discussion of council, several things became clear. First, everyone on the council opposed harassment. Second, many, perhaps at one point even a majority, felt there should not be an ordinance for a special group, but an ordinance addressing harassment in general may be appropriate. But in the discussion, I and perhaps several others got caught up in the emotions of the public hearing and doing good. If we passed the ordinance as it read, we could fix it later to apply to more than one group. There would be no harm in giving immediate protection to the bicyclist until the ordinance was as it should be. And the momentum on the council shifted to passing the ordinance and amending it in a couple of weeks or a month. We should have explored whether the ordinance was even necessary or if there were better options, such as amending existing ordinances, but we didn't. I believe the council made a mistake. Hank Waters, and I don't quote Mr. Waters very often, in his June 26th Columbia Daily Tribune, came to the same conclusion and then made the following two observations. It, the ordinance, positive purpose is more than offset by the public scorn and derision it arouses, adding unnecessarily to the war, and the rush of good feeling originally generated by the Get About program is wasting. Why have we allowed that to happen? I would venture two factors have been at work. First, an action agenda has been advanced that has not become a commitment of a large number in the community. The agenda has not been effectively built into the broader community awareness and acceptability. Secondly, our community has constantly been told how Portland and other communities do it. No one talked about the differences among the communities. Columbia has a very different community culture, and the changes are being viewed by many as being imposed upon the entire community. Change is usually the product of a sincere, committed, small group of people who push the margins. However, the changes to be effective must be allowed to integrate into the dominant culture. If the changes become too numerous or viewed as too extreme, there will be a reaction. If the reaction is strong enough, it will, at the very least, stop further actions and may even create a reversal of some of the actions that have already occurred. It is my analysis that we are at that point now. For example, if accepting a second stage grant were actually put to the vote of the citizenry, I am convinced it would fail. The ordinance does not make it better, it makes it worse. I would suggest it is not good for the bicycling community, it is not good for motorists, and it does not contribute to the vision in our visioning plan of creating a biking and walking friendly community. What can be done to change the polarization and return to Get About Columbia being a positive part of a better Columbia? Let's begin by suspending the bike harassment ordinance for 6 months. The working group proposed at the June 15th meeting probably needs to be expanded and can evaluate if amendments to the assault ordinance or other city ordinances can better serve the purpose of providing people protection from harassment. The group should also consider the additional concerns and suggestions that have been identified since the bike harassment ordinance was passed. We now see a clear agenda for the non-biking community, which we did not have clearly stated before. The working group should be large enough to include people with a variety of positions on the topic. This will give an opportunity for the broader civic discussion that has not occurred on this topic, but needs to. Let's change the rhetoric from blame and anger to calm discussions for problem solving. What am I really asking? Let's pause for just a little while and listen. Listen to a larger group of people who do not believe they have been heard and who care deeply about this. So with that, I would request legislation to suspend the bicycle harassment ordinance. I would like to request that it be a first reading at the first meeting in August so that it can be taken up on the agenda of the second meeting in August when all of the council will be here.
I'll second.
That does not have to be a motion.
Under Chapter 2, any council member can request an ordinance to be prepared as long as it doesn't take too much time, which is a little nebulous. And this would not take any time at all, hardly, just to do that. So a vote really isn't necessary.
Thank you. And that's all I have tonight.
I'll just chime in there. I think a pause is well needed on this topic for many reasons, so I look forward to that coming forward again. And I'd ask if anyone else, Ms. Hoppe, have comments.
Yeah, I could just comment on that. Is that the only, do you have any more comments?
No, I don't. I'm finished.
I'll just sort of include my comments and then go on regarding that. I think it would be.
One other thing. I do have copies, if anyone in the audience wants copies of my statement, there are copies up here. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think it would be absolutely the wrong way to go to backtrack, backslide, waver, and waffle on the decision the council made regarding this ordinance. I think it would feed into the lack of knowledge and frenzy of a smaller group. I think what needs to be done is to proceed forward with education in terms of what the ordinance does do, education in terms of the police department enforcing bicycle laws and giving tickets to bicyclists, education for bicyclists on following the rules of the road. It's a very dangerous precedent to backtrack on a decision. We had a public hearing. We had a process. I really want to say there were two people that were here to oppose the ordinance. One spoke, and when he had clarification of what the ordinance did and didn't do, he withdrew his objection. The other person who was here, who I knew of, I did not see until the end of the testimony when we were discussing it, and he was very vehemently against it. And he's a person who speaks in public and is not afraid to. And I saw him the next day, and I said, I was surprised you didn't speak against the ordinance. I saw you there at the end of the council meeting. Did you come in late? And he said, no, I listened. I found out what the ordinance did. I listened to the people who testified, and I thought, we need this ordinance. And he's an attorney also. And so I think that is the way to proceed in terms of educating people about what the ordinance does. The readings I've seen in the newspaper, the blogs, there's just a lot of, I think there's a lot of people that haven't read the ordinance, don't understand it, and haven't listened to the testimony, who are just feeding off of other people's comments. A couple other points. We met with the city attorney, the city prosecutor, the police chief made testimony that there is behavior that is very threatening and just short of assault to bicyclists by people in huge vehicles that can do great harm, that the present assault ordinances do not cover. And that this ordinance clearly will cover. I want to make a point that intent, mens rea, is the basis of criminal law. When people say, well, it requires intent, and who can prove that? That's what, there's all categories of intent, and that's what criminal law is based on, and it's based on the facts of the situation. So you have to do it with the purpose of, and show and prove the purpose of, frightening and disturbing the bicyclist. In terms of, so anyways, I think there's education to do. I believe PedNet and the city is in a position to do that education. We voted at the end of council to establish the task force after approving the ordinance to do many of the other things. And if the task force finds a different way to, or a better way to craft the ordinance or to cover more people, well, then that's will be great, but they need the protection now. The other thing is we had to be really careful about making the ordinance specific enough to make it not challenged by as a being constitutionally vague. And so part of it, the need was to have some specific language directed at regarding bicyclists so that it would be a valid statute. And so it couldn't come under some other, the first proposed vague language. So I think the thing to do is to proceed with the task force, continue to educate people, as I gave the example of the person who was very vehemently against it. Once he found out what it did, what it didn't do, the bicyclist testimony. Once people know that our police department is giving tickets to bicyclists, that we are moving forward in terms of educating people about the road, having the dialogue, I think having the task force is good. But to backtrack, it sets a really bad precedent. People will not know if the next, we have a hearing, we vote on something, and then the next time we have set this precedent that, oh, well, now we want to backtrack and change. I just think it's a very dangerous way to go. So I think I didn't have a prepared statement, but that's my main points. And I will go on to my regular council comments. Oh, in terms of the task force, I would have a suggestion in terms of reading the minutes that the Disabilities Commission representative wasn't mentioned when you proposed that last time. So I would make that suggestion. I don't think I have to make a motion on it. Regarding specifics, East Campus, there are quite a few signs, again, missing. William Street University, Rock Hill, to the there's a safety concern in terms of police, fire, finding houses because we don't have signs out there. Residents are saying that people are stopping them to find houses to visit. And this is a reoccurring problem. So what I'd like to make a motion for staff to look into a couple things. One, the possibility of putting some of the more frequently stolen signs on higher poles or on the telephone poles on Rock Quarry Road. I won't say what sign it is, but that one had a lot of problems, and now it's on a telephone pole very high up, and it hasn't been stolen for quite a while. So I know it's there's some expense to replacing these time and time and time again, but there's a danger, a safety danger too. So if I could make a motion for staff to, one, replace the signs, and two, look at putting them on higher poles or telephone poles.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say nay.
Another item, a while back I was told that the Parks Department would have recycling bins in the parks. There was a grant maybe a year ago for adding more recycling bins. I noticed at Stevens Lake Park there were no recycling bins that I saw, and we're halfway through the summer. So I looked into the bin, and they're missing.
I will check. I honestly don't know what the status is.
We had a gentleman who spoke about the need for a crosswalk at McBain and Broadway. I'd like to get staff's suggestions on whether that can be done or whether it can be looked at, and when would be the appropriate time for it to be improved.
May I make a quick comment? That's in the fourth and the first ward, and I think he's wanting something done immediately, and your motion may be appropriate for that. That will definitely be a part of the consideration of the design for the new West Broadway. But I guess the question of time on that is the critical question, because the new West Broadway is at least a year or two in the future.
I'd suggest that you ask for a staff report on the
right. Crosswalk. I would like to ask for that.
I'll second that.
All those approved, say aye. Aye. All opposed, say nay.
I think that's what I'm going in there for now.
Mr. Thornhill?
I have just one item, although I'll make just a couple of quick comments about the bicycle ordinance. I defer to my being a rookie often, but I left here wondering what I'd done as well, because I had similar feelings to what Jerry expressed. So for the time being, I'll just make a note that with regard to Ms. Hoppe's suggestion that it's a precedence that would be set, I'm not sure that a one-time suspension to make sure we did the right thing establishes a precedence. Perhaps numerous times would, but I'm not sure that one time does. I'm concerned that the perceived protection emblazons some bicyclists who are not concerned as much about road rules as they should be. Perhaps it's just that I'm noticing a few more of those folks, but it just seems that I've seen over the past couple of weeks some folks that are testing the boundaries a bit. I had to lock up my brakes at a four-way intersection that I was well into for a bicyclist that ran right through a stop sign. And perhaps it's just coincidence, but I got a look that seemed to insinuate that, I'm going to go on through. And I wasn't comfortable with the way that occurred. Could have nothing to do with that, but it was a thought that went through my mind. And finally, if this ordinance is the right thing, then I don't see why a short suspension can't serve to allow time to make it a better, more appropriately crafted ordinance that works in conjunction with our assault ordinance as it's on the books, that would protect all forms of non-motorized transportation and citizens opposed to just a single group, which was a point that I made last at our vote. And I still contend that singling out of a particular group to benefit from this particular type of ordinance is probably not the right thing to have done or to continue to do. Those are my comments on the bicycle harassment. I would like to make a request regarding the policy that we have in place currently for establishing or relating to appointments to city boards and commissions. After our last go-around with planning and zoning appointments where we reopened that for a third time. I have a concern after reviewing our ordinance with a few points, but we don't have actual job descriptions in the ordinance or a requirement for them. We have brief descriptions of boards and commissions and eligibility requirements. I'm afraid that contributes to our lack of applicants at some point, because I think folks don't know what they're signing up for. So I would like for us to have a way to make sure that our boards and commissions folks are involved in describing the jobs they think adequately fills a position. Regarding some wording in Section 2 of the ordinance, if there I'm paraphrasing, but if there are an insufficient number of qualified applicants, and it goes forward to explain what happens, what is an insufficient number? I think we had our first two go-arounds at the last planning and zoning. We had, I think it was three applicants the first time and two the second. If we have one opening, is three not enough? Is two not enough? That's not clear either. And finally, if there is a sufficient number of qualified applicants to fill all vacant positions on the board or commission, it goes on. But there's nothing here to indicate what the process is for us to actually appoint an applicant as a member of a committee. Do we interview? Do we not? Do we screen? How do we screen? So I'm not sure exactly how I'm or what I'm asking for, to coin Jerry at some point in the past. But I would like to see better clarification for job description requirements, what would be an actual a sufficient number of qualified applicants, and a little more clarification on just what it is that we do to appoint applicants to these positions.
That's something we've talked about before, and I know with several new council members a couple years ago, we started interviewing for planning and zoning, and that was a new part of the process. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've ever really sat down and clarified some of these ongoing questions. So does this sound like a future work session topic? I hate to say the word.
I just don't think it's realistic. I think we can interview everyone that applies. I think there's 13 this time for planning and zoning. And we talked about screening through those and whittling that number down. But I think that clouds the message that we're sending to the other boards. You know, what boards do we interview for? Which ones do we not? Obviously, others are more intimately involved in the workings of everything we do. So those clearly probably require some more attention. But I don't think we don't have any dedicated direction. And I think that's affecting the not maybe the type, but the number of people who may be interested in doing this. If they don't know what they're doing or how they get appointed, then perhaps they lose interest.
Well, I think what you're saying is we need to formalize the process, or
exactly,
at least the parameters of the process, which I like in terms of selection. And I think I brought up at a council motion, a previous council, getting input from planning and zoning commissioners on the job, you know, improving the job description of that particular commission. But I think it's very good to do it for all the commissions, so people have a better idea of what they're getting into. But I like the formalized process, because we sort of wing it as we go in terms of whether we interview and how much and how to select from.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's fair to continue looking for a perfect applicant. I'm up here learning as I go, and I think a lot of commission members probably can be very good participating members of their commission when they get the hang of it. I think it's unfair to continue searching for someone perfect when I think we've at some point probably had someone who could have slid into that empty seat, allowed that commission to operate at full capacity, and learn what they needed to.
On the other hand, when we decided to reopen it, we only had three people applying for two positions.
Yeah, and again, that goes back to knowing what an insufficient number of applicants is. We don't really know. So what would you suggest is the best way to?
Work session topic.
Sounds like a work session topic.
If it has to be a work session topic.
Yeah.
We've had an ongoing discussion of how to integrate our boards and commissions more fully into our council decisions, too. So I think this kind of plays into part of that whole discussion.
Well, I think we also need to all make sure that we go back to the materials that we got at retreat and had an initial discussion on boards and commissions from the materials from, I think, Sheila and Mr. Watkins. And reconnect with that. I think our discussion didn't get very far, but we started it, and I think that's where we need to continue on, and with some materials already in our hands.
I just have
a couple things this evening. Knows I'm not happy with the red lights, so I'll just throw that out there today, since it's been the hot topic of discussion. When we first originally passed the ordinance or allowing for the installation of red light cameras, one of the things I was concerned about is it not deterring bad behavior at other intersections. And in my way of thinking, increasing our fines is a way to. The cameras will, of course, bring the issue to the forefront, but in the long run, we have a lot of busy intersections in this town where people do run red lights, and so I always believe that when you hit people in their pocket, they might think twice about such behavior. And so I would like to ask staff, I don't know if I really want this in the form of a report or just even maybe to bring forward an ordinance, our fine is $125 for running a red light. So maybe, I think I would like just more information. What other communities do for their fines for running red lights, and I just really believe that increasing the fines will deter the bad behavior throughout the community as opposed to four intersections with four lights. So I would make that as a motion to ask for a staff report for the feasibility of increasing fines.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Recently attended a meeting on some downtown issues, and something that was brought up that I didn't realize is that we don't have a loitering law in our downtown area, which would allow maybe shop owners to deter bad behaviors or such as panhandling, things like that, in front of their storefronts, or if there is a, you know, a large group of people beginning to assemble outside of a place, they don't have, as long as there's no threat, they don't really have any standing to ask those people to disperse from in front of their property. So I would like to begin the process of having staff contacting the, you know, the special business district and the property owners, business owners in the downtown area, to see if that would be something beneficial to them. With all of the new downtown enforcement, if that is something that could be added to that toolbox to deter some of the fights and things that are happening in our downtown area. So I would ask for staff that in the form of a report, but just begin the dialogue and begin to gather that information.
Was that a motion?
That was a motion. Second. Then have staff begin the report and dialogue with the downtown district.
Second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. And I don't really have any other requests, but I'm going to just make a comment to the public in general. Public input is important for council members to make their decisions, and when people fail to contact their council representative, it sometimes is hard for us to judge the community desires and wishes. And I don't know if I might be an exception to the rule. I don't get a lot of comments from my constituents, so I never know quite how to read that. But going back to the bicycle ordinance, I had one phone call and opposed to that ordinance, and so, but the outcry afterwards was sufficient, and people contacted me after that. And so I would encourage people, I mean, it's part of our civic responsibility to contact your representative. It only takes a minute to pick up a phone and leave a voice message. It only takes a minute to send us an email. And I welcome comments, whether they're opposing to mine or not. So I would please encourage people to contact their council representatives on issues that are important to them rather than sending it through Trib Talk or calling in radio stations. So that would be my request of the people that I represent, the people of the community.
I have one more quick comment. I think very clearly there's one critical difference in the position Ms. Hoppe and I have, and that's the assessment of the size of the reaction, who they are, and what that reaction actually means in a broader political context. And I think it's that two different evaluations really is at the heart of our difference.
Maybe the size, but more importantly, what can best address it in terms, and mine is, I think if you get the information out there, they're responding and assessing in an educated way and actually know what the ordinance does and what the police department does.
I don't think that addresses the real issues, so that's a critical difference.
But I did overlook a motion that I'd like to make that I overlooked making because it was on a different page. On Old 63, south of Grindstone, at the entrance to Grindstone Park, the curbs are very old-fashioned and high at the entrance to the park. And I've used this park and drive there myself. And so what it happens is it causes, because the curve is very angular and high, it causes cars to almost stop before they turn into the driveway to go into Grindstone. So I'd like to make a motion for staff to look at that and see maybe if they can grind down and smooth out the edge of the curves, and that will help traffic. I receive complaints from the neighborhood association that uses that road regularly that seems to be causing some slowdown in traffic.
Second.
Set.
All those opposed say, or approve say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Anything else? I'm going to call this meeting closed.